Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, located at schiffgold.com, author of several bestsellers, can be seen on all the media outlets regularly. Welcome back, Peter.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Really like your thoughts on Puerto Rico. I think we were talking before the interview, 3.4 million souls there, hundreds of thousands will have to be relocated to the mainland and elsewhere. No electricity for 4 to 6 months. Just devastated from this latest hit by Maria. Really the worst hurricane season in at least 50 to 100 years. You have recently acquired some properties there, a home and a condo, and sustained some damage. Do you have any thoughts for them or any comments on what occurred?
We had a terrible hurricane. I mean, it happens quite often. Just this one was particularly bad in that, it hit as a Category 4 right in Puerto Rico. I mean, the eye went right over the island. You know, Puerto Rico got lucky in that Irma missed. I mean, Irma was about 50 miles off the north coast. I was down in Puerto Rico a few days after Irma, and, you know, really minimal damage. I mean, no damage to any of my properties. In fact, if anything, there was one palm tree that was blown down that was in the front of my condo, which I never liked. Irma kind of helped me out a little bit, because now the palm tree was blown down. And, you know, you're not allowed to cut it down, but since it blew down, because it's on the beach, that worked out. You know, the power was out for a few days to a week, depending on where you lived. But that's kind of par for the course in Puerto Rico. Power goes out a lot because there has been problems with the infrastructure there long before Maria came and delivered the death blow. But I left just before Maria arrived, and obviously that's where all the real damage came from, was Hurricane Maria. I mean, I had to clean up my yard. There was a lot of stuff in my yard that I paid all the workers to clean it up, and I guess it was a waste, because now although some of that stuff would have really blown all over the place, but it's such a disaster there now, it's hard to believe that it would have been any worse had I not cleaned it up after the first one. Yeah, I haven't even been able to get back down to Puerto Rico since, and so I've seen some photographs and some movies of the outside of my house and the condo, and I mean, my houses are, they're concrete. They're made of, hurricane glass, so I don't have any actual structural damage. You see houses in Puerto Rico that were completely destroyed because these houses are, made of wood. And, just like, the big bad wolf, right, the hurricane, it's not going to blow down houses made of bricks or cement. But, the houses made of wood, I mean, they just get eviscerated, and that's what happened. It's unfortunate that this has happened to that island. I mean, so much of the infrastructure is ruined, and obviously a lot of the foliage, which a lot of it will grow back, so that will come back in time. But there are a lot of older trees, 50-100-year-old trees that were down, and obviously they're not coming back, not anytime soon. But yeah, the palm trees are resilient. They'll regrow their leaves, and a lot of the shrubs will come back, and the ocean is still beautiful. It's tough life down there with no power, no running water, no internet, no cell phones, no phone communication of any kind.
Yeah, no banking, no
really,
banking.
I mean, everything is cash, but you can't even get to cash because the ATMs aren't working. Very difficult time for people living in Puerto Rico. And, it's unfortunate the infrastructure was in such bad shape that it couldn't have, better withstood this hurricane. I mean, because every town is going to, you get hit by a Category 4 hurricane, your power's going out. But normally the government can get it back up, or the power company can get it back up a lot sooner. I mean, it's taking Puerto Rico a lot longer because of the condition that it was in before. And of course, it's a government-run power company. This is not a privately owned power company. If a private company had owned the power company, it would be in much better shape. Instead, it's mired in debt, right? The power company is bankrupt, and they borrowed a lot of money, and they used the borrowed money to pay salaries and to pay pensions. They didn't use it to fix up the infrastructure.
No, exactly. But our thoughts still do go out to the people there, because it's really the human tragedy, I think you'd agree, that's just epic on the island. It'll never be the same.
2,000 or so houses are already, I think there's at least 2,000 structures that have been burned to the ground, whether they're residences or commercial structures. I mean, so, yeah, there's, who knows what the loss of life is there. I mean, it's probably could be greater than it was in Puerto Rico from Rio. We don't know. There's a lot of people that are missing. So, yeah, I mean, there's natural disasters. We had natural disasters in Texas. And,
yeah.
But, I mean, Puerto Rico, it's particularly bad. And though the fact that it is an island and it's, you know, in the middle of the ocean, it's not that easy to just get supplies there. I mean, things have to be flown in. They have to be, you know, shipped in. You know, one of the things that the Trump administration could have done to at least make things a little bit easier is agree to a one-year waiver of the Jones Act. And because the Jones Act is a swamp creature, I mean, it's a terrible law that benefits a small sliver of the economy, the shipping industry, and the overall U.S. economy suffers because we have to pay much higher prices for all of our goods because it costs more to ship them. But nowhere is that more important than Puerto Rico. I mean, Puerto Rico, you know, goods in Puerto Rico cost about twice as much as what they cost in neighboring islands. And a good reason for that is the Jones Act. And in fact, even though the average Puerto Rican, their income is half of the poorest U.S. state, the cost of living there is higher, I think it's, you know, than any state. So the people earn less, but they have to spend less. And that's, you know, because of the Jones Act. So, you know, that would at least help the situation if they got rid of it for a year. I mean, they should exempt Puerto Rico from it permanently. In fact, they should repeal the entire law because the entire country would benefit from reduced shipping costs. But at least do it for Puerto Rico, given the dire straits they're in.
Keeping with the thought of higher prices, let's talk about the looming rate hike. Obviously, at the December FOMC meeting, we're going to have a quarter point bump up in the overnight lending rate. How do you expect this to impact the markets?
Well, I mean, everybody is pretty much anticipating this rate hike. Maybe we get it, depending on where the market is. I mean, if the market collapses between now and then, we won't get it. But as long as the markets are okay with the rate hike, then the Fed will probably deliver it. The Fed believes the markets don't want the hike is when they are more likely not to do it. But rates are still very low. And even if they hike them another quarter point, they're going to still be very, very low. And I don't know, even if the Fed hikes rates in December, maybe that's the last time they're going to do it. I mean, we're very close to the end. I mean, so there's not a lot of rate hikes coming. And before you know it, it's going to be rate cuts. The problem is there's not a lot of way to go. I mean, we're not that far above zero. So when the Fed begins the next cutting cycle, you know, before you know it, we're at zero. So the real tool that the Fed is going to be using is a bigger round of quantitative easing. And that's what, you know, the markets are all trying to prepare for quantitative tightening, for the shrinking of the balance sheet. What they really should be thinking about is when is it going to start to expand again and by how much?
So you don't really buy the argument, then, that we're hearing from hawkish comments?
No. I mean, whether they want to or not, practically, it's impossible. I mean, they can't really reduce the balance sheet in any significant way. Could they reduce it by a trivial amount? Yeah, but not for very long. Because as the economy goes back into recession, what is the Fed going to do? I mean, obviously, they're going to try to stimulate the economy. And what's the only way they can do that? I mean, rate cuts are not going to provide much stimulus when you're starting from such a low rate. So the stimulus is really going to be in another round of quantitative easing. And even if they shrink the balance sheet a tiny bit, they're going to blow it back up again much quicker when they have to do QE4.
So what's the impact then on the precious metals? We've had a rough 4 weeks here after having some explosive moves. And the greenback, obviously a big factor there in anticipation of the upcoming rate hike. It had a bounce.
Part of it is the rate hike, and part of it is just enthusiasm over the Trump tax cuts and the prospect of finally getting these tax cuts. You know, kind of the same way the dollar rallied at the end of last year after Trump won the election. You know, there was a big dollar rally. People were anticipating tax cuts and deregulation. So that didn't really materialize. I mean, we didn't get rid of Obamacare. A lot of regulations that were here under Obama are still here under Trump. It's not like all of a sudden we're this bastion of, you know, laissez-faire. And I think this is more false optimism. I don't even think the tax cuts are going to be passed in their current form. And even if they are, it's not, you know, supportive of the economy. It just means bigger deficits. It just means the government is going to collect revenue by printing it rather than taxing it. And, you know, that's weaker for the dollar. If we have bigger deficits and more money printing, that is not a bullish scenario.
Yeah, speaking of the U.S. dollar, you know, China has obviously announced that it's going to, I'm quoting here, compel Saudi Arabia to trade in terms of oil. They have a new contract, which you may know, involves a combination of gold backing and yuan backing for an oil contract. Do you see this as, something that over time at least could impact the precious metals?
Obviously, it's bullish. I mean, to the extent that China is backing an oil contract with gold, it's positive for gold. You know, it's negative for the U.S. dollar. And, you know, this is not happening in a vacuum. I mean, you're seeing this type of de-dollarization all around the world. I mean, a lot of our creditors who own a lot of dollars, who have been transacting in dollars, are trying to move away from the dollar. You know, one reason is I think they do recognize that the dollar is going to lose a lot of value over time, that it's going to cease to be the reserve currency. But I think part of it is just political and strategic. I mean, the U.S. government has been using the dollar as a weapon. They've almost weaponized the currency because they threaten sanctions with any country that doesn't, you know, play by their rules. And the sanctions are basically metered out by the dollar and denying access to the Federal Reserve system and the clearing system for dollars and shutting people out. And so foreign governments don't like the U.S. government having all that leverage over them. And so the way they have to get around it is to get out of the U.S. dollar system so the U.S. government doesn't have that hanging over their heads. The U.S. government should be smart enough to realize where its bread is buttered. And just say, you know what, you know, whatever we want to do, we're not going to weaponize the dollar. We're not going to exploit the fact that we are issuing the world's reserve currency. We are going to respect that, and we're not going to intermingle our foreign policy with the dollar, and we're not going to punish people by denying them access to the dollar if they don't do what we tell them, right? They should have that as a precedent. But once they basically said, hey, you know, if you don't do what we want, we're going to punish you. I mean, you know, if they can do it over something like North Korea, they can do it over anything. Once you get the camel's nose under the tent and you establish this precedent, our creditors are like, wait a minute. I mean, you know, even though there could be people that agree with us on North Korea, hey, North Korea, these guys are bad dudes, but how do we know what in the future they're going to demand? And then if you don't do it, we're going to sanction you, right? So I think a lot of countries, you know, just don't want to wait that out. They don't want to find out. They just want to say, you know what, we just got to get out from under this system so that we don't have to worry about this future threat.
It's a perfect segue right into Venezuela. You may have read that President Maduro has just suggested oil trade in terms of Russian ruble and Chinese yuan. Is this a theme that you expect to snowball?
Yep, absolutely. And not just in some of these fringe economies like Venezuela, right? I think this is going to become more mainstream.
Okay, and when it does, then do we just see a perpetual slow decline in the U.S. dollar as we've seen over the past few months, or do we reach the watershed moment?
We will eventually reach that watershed moment. The question is, you know, from what level will the dollar collapse? I mean, how much lower will it go in an orderly manner before its decline becomes disorderly, before it becomes a crisis? And there, I don't know, but I do think that that is where we're headed.
And we also read recently that China has three times the gold stockpile that we officially thought. They report sporadically, or at least did for a few years now. That seems to be changing, approaching the 9,000-ton level. So obviously, they're on track to eclipse the largest reserves in the world here in the U.S. What does that portend for the yuan and the U.S. dollar?
Well, just added strength to the yuan. I mean, you just look at the direction where the gold is flowing. And that's where, you know, the strength is headed. I mean, the East is amassing gold. The West is selling it because, you know, they're basically having to sell to pay their bills. So the emerging economies are accumulating and the developed economies are selling it down because of a change in their relative financial position. And it shows you, you know, this is where the future power is. It's the people that are buying gold, that are increasing their gold reserves. This is the power centers of the future. This is where the wealth is being accumulated. Other countries that were on top but are now having to sell off their gold, you know, they're the falling powers.
You know, the commitment of traders reports really shows that the specs are a bit long here, and the hedge funds are quite long silver and gold.
Well, look, I know that a lot of the traders were very, very bullish on the dollar when the year began. In fact, it was probably the most crowded trade out there. And obviously, that's reversed. I mean, that was completely wrong. We're buying into the top. You now have more people who are now short the dollar. But, I don't think it's a crowded trade yet. And I think even the bears are not bearish enough. I mean, so I think everybody is wrong because the bulls are wrong because they're just wrong. And I think the bears are wrong because they're not bearish enough. They, you know, they think the dollar will go down a little bit, but I think it's going to go down a lot. But on the gold, yeah, I do think if you look at those commitment of traders, I mean, it has been a pretty good indicator, you know, as to where the commercials are and, you know, when you might get a rally or when you might get a sell-off. But, you know, I'm not as concerned about these short-term moves. I mean, I think all this is just a bunch of noise, and that there's such a big move coming that, to me, you know, $20, $50 moves, I mean, I'm not a futures trader. I'm not trading options. So to me, you know, it doesn't really matter. I just want people positioned properly so that when the gold market takes off, they're on the right side.
The primary theme is key, and Hugo Salinas Price, you know, just commented on the China link to oil and gold. He claims that this will, over time, will change everything, overturn the global economies.
The old dollar is a very important component of today's global economy. I think it's a disruptive component. I think it's doing damage. But what it is doing is it allows the United States to live beyond its means. It allows the United States to run these massive trade deficits and current account deficits. It allows Americans to consume things they don't produce, to borrow money they didn't save. And America has a standard of living that's much higher as a result of this system. Conversely, though, the rest of the world is living a lower standard of living. They are living beneath their means. They are producing but not consuming. They're saving but not borrowing. This global economy that benefits America at the expense of other people, this is going to change. When the dollar collapses, right, America's standard of living is going to collapse with it. Our consumption is going to go way down, but that means somebody else's consumption is going to go way up. Yeah, we're not going to be borrowing and spending anymore. I mean, we're going to have to start saving. We're going to have to start producing. So this is going to be a major shift in relative living standards, in trade, in economic activity, in relative valuations of currencies and assets. So these are big changes that are coming. And a lot of people are going to profit from those changes if they're positioned the right way, and a lot of people are going to lose. There's a lot of people that are going to suffer from this realignment.
Dennis Gertman recently noted that the Bank of International Settlements is attempting to suppress the gold price. Any quick comments there?
I mean, I think the markets have acted in a way to suppress the price for a while, because I think gold prices should be much higher than they are right now. Just like governments suppressed, the United States government suppressed the price of gold for a long time until we went off the gold standard in 1971, and then the market, you know, reset the price much higher. I think that the price of gold is being constrained for whatever reason, whatever forces are coming to bear to keep the price of gold down. I mean, look at the cost of mining has skyrocketed. That's why mining companies don't make any money really anymore, is because the price of gold has not kept pace with the cost to mine it. But at some point, market forces are going to overwhelm whatever's been suppressing the price of gold, whether it's a coordinated effort or just the result of markets gambling. But at some point, the price of gold is going to revert to where it should be, which is much, much higher than it is now.
What would you recommend would be, let's say, an ideal universal minimum precious metals exposure?
10%, you know, as a minimum in physical gold. And, you know, depending on your risk tolerance, you could have some, and you can then have 5 or 10% or 20% in gold-related equities, because I think they're very cheap. And I think that people that, you know, that are willing to take the risk, there's a huge reward if I'm right on what's going to happen to gold and gold stocks. But, you know, most people don't own any gold. They don't have any gold stocks. I think they're making a big mistake. So people should buy gold. And people could have more than that. I mean, that's just kind of a minimal, you know, depending on their circumstances. And you should diversify how you own it. You should have some physically. You should have it in your possession. You know, buy it right. Buy it from me at Shift Gold, and make sure you're storing it someplace safe. But you should also have gold diversified in where you're holding it. You should keep gold outside the United States. You should have storage facilities. People should have accounts at Gold Money, which is a perfect way to do it, because then you have your pick of vaults around the world. Plus, not only that, you have access to your gold immediately if you need it as a medium of exchange. You can spend your gold using an app on your cell phone, or you can access it through your debit card, which you get for free. And more importantly, too, if you're a merchant, if you have services that you're selling or goods that you're selling, you can be paid in gold. You can have your customers pay you in gold even if they don't have gold. They can pay you in dollars, and it automatically gets converted to gold when it hits your account, and you don't have to be in the banking system. You can keep your gold in a vault, a Briggs vault with your name on it, and you don't have to have a checking account where you have to worry about the bank failing.
Yeah, Gold Money announced today that they're accepting Ethereum and Bitcoin as well now for deposits.
But, you know, the more interesting thing is to own the stock if you want to play on the cryptos, because I don't believe these cryptocurrencies are going to ultimately work. I think they're going to crash. But to the extent that there's a lot of interest in trading them, Gold Money can make a lot of money off of that. It's like, you know, the gamblers in the casino all lose, but the casino makes money. I think they're all going. I mean, if they're not backed by anything, they're not worth anything.
Think of the functionality within just Ethereum and Bitcoin alone. Imagine a money where you actually have functionality. You had a gold coin that was also a Swiss Army knife. Because, see, that's what you really have with the cryptos.
I can't even open a letter. I can't open a can of beer. You can't do anything with it.
It's not a fair comparison. Look, we're comparing two different things. I'm with you. I mean, the precious metals are the way to go. Ultimately, people have to get their funds outside of the system. There's no question about that. Still, there's incredible functionality programmed within a lot of these currencies. That's a whole different conversation.
No point in human history where the free market has created money out of nothing. I mean, the free market has created money for thousands of years, and everything that's functioned as money has always functioned as a commodity before it was accepted as money. So these cryptocurrencies are the first time in history that we're trying to make money out of nothing. Never a commodity is, and I don't think it's going to work. What if the price of Bitcoin goes from 5,000 to 500? Will you still feel the same?
And I would buy as much as possible.
But what about a lot of the people that bought it at 5,000 that never want to touch it again because they lost 90% of their money and it's not, or their purchasing power?
When they look back at it, I think a year or two from now, and it's at 15, 20, 50,000.
Believe me, if it goes from 5,000 to 500, it ain't going to 20.
Well, no, we agree. We see at least a 40, maybe even 70% haircut coming. But I mean, ultimately, with just 21 million outstanding.
21 million is not a small number, especially if nobody wants it, right? You supply a Bitcoin. But what happens if the demand goes? Even if you believe in cryptocurrencies, there's no way that somebody is not going to come up with a better cryptocurrency than Bitcoin if they haven't already done so.
Yeah, it's called Komodo, KMD. And it's totally anonymous, like Monero. I'm not going to argue with it. There is a lot of fluff there. It's very similar to 1997, 98 internet, but still, there were a couple of years left of big moves, and many of those will survive, such as the Amazon right now, okay? The Googles, the Yahoos.
Yeah, but I don't know that any of the cryptos...
Bitcoin is. Listen, it has the developers and the backbone. They really do have dedicated people. Encryption is the most complex problem. You have whole floors at the NSA dedicated to just encryption. And these people are out there creating a currency that completely resolves this issue.
Look, a currency needs to be backed by something. They've created a fiat digital currency.
Peter, you know that mining gold and silver, most difficult thing in refining, and that's what gives it so much value, that in its scarcity. You can make the same argument for Bitcoin. Energy and resources required to find those encrypted keys within the blockchain.
There's a difference, though, that you can't overlook. When you expend all those resources to mine gold, at the end of the day, you've mined gold. You now have gold. You have an element, a commodity, a metal that is desirable and has properties that people want and that gives it value. There's uses for gold. There were uses for gold long before it became money. If gold wasn't such a useful, valuable, highly coveted commodity, it never would have become money, right? So it was commodity first and money second. When you spend all these resources, when you spend all this energy to create a Bitcoin, you've created nothing, nothing of any substance. There's nothing you can do with your Bitcoin. You can give it to somebody else if they want it, but they can't do anything with it other than give it to another person. That's not true with gold. There are lots of uses for gold that have nothing to do with using it as money. And it's because of those other uses that it's able to be money. And so there's no way that Bitcoin can survive as money because there's nothing to prevent the price from crashing. Natural buyers for gold. There are no natural buyers for Bitcoin.
Think of it as just a small world, a different domain.
You know, to me, again, it's more like alchemy. I mean, it's not a VCR or, you know, a DVD. These were actual products that did things. And yes, you know, the DVRs, you know, were made out by, DVDs, right? The VHS or Beta was made. You know, Beta didn't make it. It came out first, but then VHS, and now it's all gone. And even the DVDs are gone now because people just stream stuff on the internet. And that is even my point on a cryptocurrency. Assuming that I'm wrong and cryptocurrencies can work, to think that the very first cryptocurrency is the one that's going to win is ridiculous. I mean, you know, The first one is not going to be the best one.
The early adopter argument. I mean, take a look at Amazon. Amazon was the first one. It is still the best one. And it has totally overturned the entire way.
Google was not even close to the first search engine. There were all sorts of search engines that went bankrupt long before Google showed up. Plenty of other social media companies came and went.
But have you really looked into it? Because you have to realize Bitcoin was not the first. There was 5 or 10 currencies that all went belly up before Bitcoin. They finally got it right, which brought Bitcoin to fruition. And they finally got it right with Satoshi Nakamoto.
I don't think they got it right yet either. This one will go belly up too.
I don't have a crystal ball, but the only thing I would ask you is just keep your mind a little bit open to the fact that this could be a different domain, okay, in conjunction with the U.S. dollar. Look, you're at $158 billion market right here. On track right now, current estimates, we could see a $5 trillion market. You can't ignore a $5 trillion market. That makes the stock and bond markets look tiny.
Well, first of all, it's not about ignoring it because it doesn't exist right now. Right now, it's just a speculation that it might get that big. I don't think that that's going to happen. The bubble is big enough. Now, does that mean it can't get any bigger? No, obviously, all bubbles can get bigger, but all bubbles pop. The main money that's going to be made on Bitcoin is by the people who sell it. Yes, if you want to make money in Bitcoin, you better sell.
Peter, please tell people more about your services.
They can have an account with Gold Money. They, you know, they want to trade in some of their cryptos for real money and still have the functionality. They can go to goldmoney.com or shiftgold.com. If you've got more money and you want to have a portfolio that I manage, actively manage a portfolio internationally and in stocks and bonds around the world in countries that have less government and fewer regulations and currencies that are going to gain against the dollar. You can do that at my company, Euro Pacific Capital, europac.com, europac.com, or make sure and listen to me on radio, shiftradio.com, my YouTube channel, Peter Schiff. I mean, I do podcasts, video blogs. You know, when you're on my website, europac.com, sign up for my, you know, free publications. I mean, a lot of ways that try to communicate my ideas with my audience. And so follow me, and more importantly, send me some money. Let me manage some of your money. Let me get you out of harm's way and build a portfolio that's going to do well in the environment that's coming.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%. totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.